present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Thank you. Welcome to another quiz, which starts off this week with this interesting advertisement from the Oxford Star.
Quads for hire. Two sizes, ideal for fundraising events, incentive schemes, or corporate entertainments.
And that was sent our way by Mrs. J. Dixon of Wallingford and read to us from the graceful larynx of Mr. Brian Perkins. Time now to go into the Wendy House and meet our own group of quads. On my right, representing Private Eye, our editor Ian Hislop, and wearing a captain's romper suit, Richard Ingram. On the other side, representing journalism proper, are The Guardian's Michael White and his dummy, Alan Curran. Round one opens with this heartfelt plea found in the letters page of the Brighton Evening Argus.
Dear sir, are the people of Brighton aware that their famous promenade stinks of dog mess? Or is it only me?
And Tony Hadley of Brighton caught whiff of that one and sent it in. Now we set the tone for the rest of the show. We'll move on to Richard Ingram's and his first question. Richard, who are keeping quiet about having been beastly to the Germans?
I think this refers to a meeting that took place at Chequers. Mrs. Thatcher invited a lot of peculiar dons from Oxford to come and tell her what the Germans were like. And afterwards, her friend, her advisor, Mr. Powell, issued this curious memo, rather in the form of one of those things in the Sun, saying, 10 things you didn't know about the Germans. Beer, swilling, lagerlouts, small moustaches. And this memo found its way into the hands of the Independent. Very good newspaper. And caused a lot of embarrassment to everyone.
Absolutely right. Very well answered. It's all to do with the secret memo published in the Independent on Sunday's weekly leaks supplement, describing the German national character as defined by a Chequers think tank of top academics, foreign policy advisers, taxi drivers and soccer fans. The memo accused the Germans of being arrogant, assertive, egotistic, generally Ridley-esque, bullying. And while we're on the subject, the news quiz would like to apologise to an anonymous listener who rang the BBC after last week's programme to make the following complaint.
You should be ashamed of making jokes at Nicholas Ridley's expense. He should be given a gold medal for what he said. And I speak as a German.
We hurriedly move on to Ian Hislop. Ian, your question. Staying with political affairs, which mother knows best about family matters?
Ah, this is the Queen Mother.
No, it isn't.
It's Mother Teresa.
Or there's only one who wafts down out of space.
Oh, Mother Thatch.
Yes.
Mrs. Thatcher has been giving her advice on family life to all and sundry. Have twins. No, that wasn't it. What was it?
She was addressing a meeting of people called a campaign for having more women in public life. Which was a great mistake, I think.
You just made that up.
Well, hold on.
Aaron's mother. I'm sure our friend Esther and all those people were there. They want to have more women MPs. Well, I mean, if you take a look at Mrs. Thatcher, would you want to have more of her? Perfectly obvious, the answer is no.
Well,
that's got to be worth 2 points.
Yes. You get 2 points. I don't know what for, but you get them. It all concerns the mother of Parliament's Margaret Thatcher and her interest, increasing concern for the family, which explains the number of ministers she's released to spend more time with them. Thank you, members of the SDP. And it's all part of a government drive to ensure fathers support their children. Of course, with Dennis, it's the other way round. Michael White, before your first question, we pause for a brief clue provided by this interesting cutting found in the Times.
Agenda, the week ahead, Friday. Gerald Kaufman reveals Labour's plans for Britain's place in the world, in Stockport.
Anyway, it was Martin Lennox of London who was our political correspondent there. Michael White, with that in mind, can you tell us about the old bull and bush?
The leader of the Labour Party went to Washington to see if they could do better with Mr. Bush than they'd done with Mr. Reagan. And Mr. Bush gave him half an hour, and it was all jolly good. And he's under the impression that the Labour Party stands for bald people and nuclear weapons now, so it's all right. And, it was a jolly successful trip, and the New York Times said he was treated almost like a head of state, a bald head of state.
Quite right. It all referred to the opposition leader, Neil Kinnock, who went to America in a desperate attempt to win international credibility, but instead spoke to George Bush. A starstruck Mr. Kinnock spoke to the US president for 35 minutes in the presence of an interpreter. Apparently Bush stood up for most of the meeting, as whenever he sat down, Kinnock's tongue was in the way, and a little bit of political balance there. And finally, in this round, Alan Carr on a perfectly intelligible question, preceded by a perfectly unintelligible piece of music.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain. He was looking for the place called Lee Ho Fox. Get a big dish of beef chow mein. Werewolves of London.
Alan, who can't find a she in wolf's clothing?
Well, there is a body of people in this country, Barry, who is looking for a woman that changes when the moon comes up. Most of us have spent our lives looking for a woman that changed when the moon came up and went mad, bared her fangs and did unspeakable things to anybody who came across her path. It is for a film. And the last I saw on the Telegraph was they hit on Fatima Whitbread. For some reason, this woman has to be enormously strong. I presume he looked like Colonel Gaddafi, but anyway, at least when she's gone balmy and turned into the werewolf. And Fatima Whitbread is the front runner, or front howler at the moment. I don't know why they want it, but it's that American werewolf in London, and it's going to be female this time. Because if you remember from last time, it lost much of its stuff in the denouement, and cannot come back as a male werewolf. I have seen it three times and nowhere else.
I haven't understood a word, but I'll give you a mouse. I...
You saw what happened to the werewolf, and did you not see it? It gets emasculated.
Oh, does he?
Yes.
Oh, I see. I didn't think that part of the body was involved.
He uses the term loosely. In fact, he uses everything loosely now.
It means if you've got any denouement in the fridge, throw it out.
You see, you bring the intellectuals on, they ruin it for everybody. And the score at the end of the first round they're always are 4-4. Why should they be different this week? It's 4-4, ladies and gentlemen. We pause for a few seconds now and enter round two with this interesting narrative from London's Midweek magazine.
Cameroon singer Obama Esuma Julio Defer, known as Mongo Fire, the king of women, has been sued for divorce by 15 of his 45 wives, who say they will drop their case if he buys them a car. He's refused, claiming he's saving up to buy himself a minibus.
I'm glad I didn't have to say all that. And it was Conrad Chung of London who spotted that for us. Back to you, Richard Ingrams. Richard, where are male members offensive to women?
Well, it must be in the Houses of Parliament.
Quite right.
Where all these werewolves are to be found. Some ladies in the House of Commons, including the most ghastly MP of all, I think, a woman called Mrs. Gorman, has been complaining about rude insults, the sexist variety, being flung across the floor at her. And other things besides, I believe. Particularly late at night, when they all get a bit out of hand.
Yeah. Is that a German name, Gorman?
No, it's Irish. She's dropped the O.
But she had this hormone replacement therapy, and she's never been the same since. She could get the part of this werewolf in the film. Sorry, I'm feeling very sexist tonight. It must be the hot weather.
We'll throw a bucket of water over if it gets too difficult. It's all about the House of Commons, the well-known Gentlemen's Club, which, according to MPs Angela Rumbold and Theresa Gorman, is largely populated by male chauvinists. They describe them on that non-sexist Radio 4 programme, Woman's Hour, as arrogant, aggressive, bullying, egotistic, and altogether too German for their own good. Ian Heslop, a television question for you. What changes might contribute to red square eyes? Red square.
It's a Russian question, isn't it, Barry?
Oh, God, we've got any more.
This is Maxwell Vision, which is going to be beamed down into Red Square 24 hours a day. Hundreds of pictures of Captain Bob lining the walls of the cathedrals. This is drivel, sorry. I have no idea. Richard?
We know.
It's nothing to do with Captain Bob at all. Over to the other
Captain
side.
Bob. Comrade Gorbachev, in between ending the Second World War and losing the Ukraine, has freed the Soviet media, which means that we're going to get sort of Radio Karolinsky in the Baltic Sea. And as I understand it, he's going to sort of open up the Soviet media to sort of pluralism
and Captain Bob.
Neighbors, and possibly to Captain Bob, yes, although I hear that Rupert Murdoch has applied for Soviet citizenship with a view to buying several stations, and that's about it, really.
Yes, I think you've got it right. You've got your bonus points for that. It's all about Soviet state-controlled TV, which is about to be deregulated in line with the westernization plans of President Gorbachev. And we break off from the news to sample this set of fire instructions found in the bedroom of Reed's Hotel, Madeira.
1, remain calm. 2, alarm the staff.
And James Crooker of London maintained his composure long enough to note that down and send it to us. Michael White, it's your turn to endure a short burst of clueful melody in the company of Spike Milligan and Peter Sellers.
He's innocent. Of what again? He's innocent. You know, Nixon is innocent. So please don't let him go. He's served with ice in Africa and the land they owe. Yes, he's innocent. Of what again? I know.
Michael, why might Tricky Dicky finally be brought to book?
It's Rose Kennedy's 100th birthday. She stayed indoors because Ted Kennedy offered to take her for a drive. It's not. In Yorba Linda, California, Richard Nixon has finally been brought to rest with the opening of a Nixon library, which has been funded by large square gentlemen in suits, ask no questions, but they pay cash. They've paid about $1.7 million. It seems to me the great thing about it is that, you know, we can all go and break in. Nobody's to pay. You go through the window and get arrested and plead.
Absolutely right. It's all because of the Richard Nixon Library. Visitors will pay $5 for their entrance ticket, which is then shredded at the turnstiles. Pride of Place is a specially ordained Watergate exhibit featuring a sonnet lumiere of buggers through the ages. Alain.
Oh, I'm just thinking of the Reagan Library. The Janet and John wing of the Reagan Library. Sit there for hours. Anyway, yes.
Alan, your question, how did Fowl play a bigger dud than the star?
Well, it's about Tesco's chickens.
That's right.
Studley Moore, who goes on television, extremely expensive advert, and says, where are my chickens? Obviously, the Frenchman says it to him, then he sells him some cheese. Tesco's not knowing the difference between chickens and cheese. There has been an accusation, but it's only by a rival organisation from Tesco, saying that Tesco's chickens don't run around wild. They get a syringe full up the bum and then fall over. They are not really wild at all. That they roam is entirely due to chemical infusions. They are just rambling rather than wild. You cannot understand a word they say. They come in with their little combs wobbling and their little beaks are slack. Crawl onto your plate and die, and presumably fill you with whatever it is. Are we going to have the one about the Scotsman and cannabis in his sporran? Of course, we could bring together the sporran and the chicken, a thing that doesn't happen very often, except on the London Tube. this is Tesco's chickens, which are all addicts.
That's cool.
It's a whole new meaning to cold turkey, doesn't it?
Ah. And the next question goes to young and reckless Richard Ingrams, and there's a big clue there, Richard. Richard, why might taking a powder put you among the young ones?
The young ones? Is that a popular singing group?
No.
No, I tell you
it
what it's
to
about.
It's to do with youth.
It's to do with youth and the latest scientific discovery, which is an amazing sort of queen mother pill that you take, and so that when you're 90, you're like the queen mother. We can all be like the queen. You know what I mean? This lively, gin-swilling woman. Waving at everyone at the age of 90, isn't she incredible? And you and I can be like that if we choose. I'm not sure I choose. I'd rather be more like this Madonna person. Take no shine to her.
That'll take more than 20 years off you.
Yes. You've been jogging round Hyde Park trying to...
Being beaten up by yes. huge men.
I thought I might have a go at that tomorrow morning.
How satirists spend their spare time, maybe.
Never mind.
This is about the amazing new rejuvenating drug developed by researchers at St. Thomas's Hospital, London. The drug apparently can prolong active life and make the elderly look 20 years younger, which Mike goes on to way to explaining why there's a short gap between the disappearance of Nicholas Ridley from public life and the emergence of 43-year-old unknown Peter Lilly to take his place. You should see the picture in the attic. Opponents of the drug... Opponents of the drug say it's really only part of the government's plan to make pensioners eligible for the YTS scheme. Ian, prick up your ears to this musical clue.
I'm gonna get me a gun. I'm gonna get me a gun.
Well, that was unsurprisingly I'm Gonna Get Me a Gun by Cat Stevens. And the question is, Ian, in the army, who won't get the bullet for a poor show of arms?
Oh, I thought this was the Cat Stevens question about assassinating Salman Rushdie, since he'd converted to Islam, but it obviously isn't.
No, it isn't. Alan Corran knows the answer.
Oh, yeah, this is the defence chance, isn't it?
This is the one about the Royal Tournament.
In the holsters.
It's all about empty holsters with copies of the European stuffed down them.
That's right.
These people were guarding the Queen with brown paper. In the event of terrorists leaping on, they would open their holsters and throw things at them. You knew that?
Yes,
didn't you?
Yes, I did, yeah.
Yeah, we'll give him one for knowing it, and give Alan two for getting it
right. It's all
right
at the Royal Tournament, because they build guns.
Absolutely right. The question referred to is the soldiers on security guard duty at the Royal Tournament, Earl's Court, who've been patrolling with batteries in their belts instead of bullets and empty holsters stuffed with newspapers. Intruders have been met with a tough, no-nonsense challenge of, I've got a copy of the European and I'm not afraid to use it. And finally in this round, Alan, where did a warder find he wasn't his brother's keeper?
This is two blokes with the same name, but as they sound the same as they look. There's two blokes in Cardiff jail, and one of them's one side of the bars and the other one's the other side of the bars, but now they've switched places, because the one on this side of the bars went to see the one on the other side of the bars. And the only way you can tell the difference between them, presumably for their mother's sake, is they've got a different name tattooed on their neck. One says Trevor and the other one says Kevin. And it took some days for the warders, who were in Cardiff a bit dim, to twig they'd got the wrong one, because the one with Kevin round his neck had walked out, and the one with Trevor round his neck was still there.
Yes, that's
it. They were
it.
Called Fishlock or something.
You've got it absolutely, except that, according to my information, the tattoos on their necks, one is 15, and the other is 15 and a half. That's all I can really add to that. The scores at the end of round three are, well, Richard and Ian have crept up to 11, but Alan and Michael are still in the lead with 12. The final round commences with this extract from the TV pages of The Telegraph.
BBC Two, 12:05 a.m, Open University. A suitable place to have a baby. Three couples have an open-ended discussion.
and B.D. Cooper of Hailshaw was our medical correspondent there. Richard, can you tell us about the Bond Street tomfoolery that fell off the back of a lorry?
Well, somebody chucked a brick through Asprey, didn't they?
Oh, slightly more than that.
I think it was someone from Mappin and Webb. Because the next day it was revealed that Asprey's were going to buy up Mappin and Webb. You see the connection, do you?
I do get it. I grasp the connection there.
I'm not sure the press has been alive.
It was a lorry with a pole.
That's right.
In the back of it. And
the pole through the brick.
It was Charles Pole.
Oh, Charles Pole. Yes, very good. Threw his memo through the window.
Stole this German necklace.
Yes, go on, sorry. Go on, I'm in.
No, the thieves had already taken all the jewels.
Yeah.
They'd been in once and taken half Asprey's collection. And Asprey's put the best thing of all, the necklace in the window, saying, ha-ha, you didn't get this. And they did. The next day, which is quite amusing, really.
There's also a peculiar story of an attack, or rather retreat, on Asprey's jeweller's shop window by a 3-ton builder's lorry. Tony Mehmet, who witnessed the robbery, told the Telegraph,
"There are quite a lot of roadworks going on in the area, and so seeing builders' lorries coming up and down is no big deal. It was only when he tried to park it inside Asprey's that I thought something was going on."
Ian, who's running rings around Wiltshire Farmers?
Ah, now we have someone here who's actually been in one of these rings today.
It's quite amazing that you should bring this up. It's
quite it's paranormal.
Could I introduce you to Mr. Paranormal Ring himself?
No, it just so happens. I mean, it is rather amazing. It's quite paranormal. It's sort of weird. Weird. But the day before yesterday, I stood in this amazing ring in the field in Wiltshire. Which,
he obviously learnt a lot about
it. Something. Well, nobody knows what they are, and they appear overnight. And only in this country, and only in certain parts of Wiltshire.
They're huge depressions in the ground, as though someone had dropped tons of unsold copies of the European on them. Say, just as one explanation.
It's very possible. I think scientists are looking into that one. Even now.
Ridley thinks they're marker zones for German parachutists, and they seem to be reasonable. They come out of us.
The Ridley Defence volunteers are ready for them. The answer is probably that nobody knows who or what is responsible for the mysterious circles that have appeared in Wiltshire cornfields regularly for the past 10 years, which Richard noticed only recently. Various government agencies are frustrated by the mystery, principally the Arts Council, who are dying to know who to send a grant to. And while we're out in the country, here's a curio from the Birmingham Daily News, sent to us by Barry Butler of King's Heath.
Police called out to an alleged covert meeting of the Ku Klux Klan in a field in the West Midlands. Discovered it was only an innocent monthly gathering of local beekeepers.
Thank you for that, Barry Butler, and keep the cuttings coming. Michael White, your final question. Which singer jogged into trouble in the park?
Must be Madonna, mustn't it? I didn't have a clue before I came into the studio, but Ingram's carelessly let it slip. He did a Ridley. Yes. Must be Madonna, mucking about in the park, looking for a bit of publicity, taking her clothes off, being attacked by violent hoodlums who probably got away without much injury. Is that about right?
No, she brought them with her.
She brought them with her?
Their own hoodlums.
She went jogging at lunchtime in Hyde Park to try and avoid the crowds.
It is Madonna, the nubile star of stage screen and Leonardo cartoon, who likes to go for a healthy jog surrounded by a gang of murdering thugs. During one sortie through Hyde Park, Madonna and her minders went on a sponsored fun run over several sunbathers while shouting abuse at nearby photographers. Later it was revealed that they were only miming. And finally, Alan,
do you know, just before you leave Madonna, that her sponsors, Reebok, have pulled out of Madonna, which makes them the first ever.
Come along with prepared jokes.
Yes, that's not fair. You can't come prepared with jokes. You really can't.
I want my questions, sir. Please, sir, can I have some more?
There's You've got a nice question coming, sir. Nice, juicy question.
Not the
question
dog shit one, is it?
What?
The first man prosecuted under the Canine Feces Act.
Nothing. No.
It's all been cleared up. No. All our... Okay. If I were Ian Hislop here, I'd say, all are gone, the old familiar feces. Now... But as I didn't come with any prepared jokes, I won't do that one. Okay. So it's not the dog shit question. What is it, then?
Well, finally, Alan... Your question, why won't Wiesbaden let another pair of drawers pass their lips?
Excuse me, I need my glasses to think about this one. Meet Prurient Hogs. Prurient Mog says? This is William Rees Mog. William Rees Dog. It's a Mogshit story. Just put down TV Germans meet Prurient Mogs. Is this...
Michael tell us what
pathetic,
it really is.
Yeah, Michael, would you like to answer this
man
question?
Man of his age. Lord Rees-Mogg, whom heavens preserve, because I think he's still important at the BBC. He's certainly important in my life. Lord Rees-Mogg issued a report, or issued something, to the effect that the Germans were even more blue-nosed about television than we are at the moment, and therefore certain things flow from it, but be honest, I'm not sure, but I think that's good enough to get 2 points.
You're getting out for that, lad.
Do I not?
Wiesbaden.
Because it is quite, well, I'll tell you about this. It's because the burghers of Wiesbaden in West Germany, they banned sex shops from selling cherry-flavoured edible undies. Because they don't meet the required health standards for groceries.
What time of day does this programme go out?
Not at all, probably, however. The problem with knickers, or as listeners will know them, E479, is that they're supposed to carry a list of their contents. So it's time for us to move along. And while I pass a hat round, can I ask the members of the panel to read out a few ditties from their collection of cuttings? Richard, have you anything to amuse us?
This is a cultural item this week from Norfolk. On July the 22nd, in St. Nicholas's Chapel, the King's Lynn Chorus are presenting The Trees So High, a symphonic ballad by Patrick Hadley. We hope that your members will take this opportunity of booing in advance.
Sooner than later, I would have thought. Ian, what have you got for us?
This is from the Ilford Post, and it's about a flower show. On both days, the show opens at 12 noon and closes at 7. Councillor Annell said, there really will be something for everyone at the show, including a lot more toilets.
Michael, what have you brought for us?
Financial Times, laugh a minute. Construction contracts. Kier Management is on site, ready to start construction on the £75 million North Pole depot for British Rail's Channel Tunnel project.
Thank you, Michael. Alan.
From the Greenock Telegraph. Mr. Fawcett told the court that because of the extremely hot weather, he had removed his toupee and left it on the seat of his car before going into the pub. He was not even, he said, particularly upset when he came out to see the accused walking about in it, because long experience had taught him that a hairpiece was something that was likely to be taken advantage of. He did not lose his temper, he said, until Robinson stuffed it down the front of his trousers and shouted out to all and sundry that he was making an attempt on the world ferret record.
Did you notice the element of German provocation? Hairpiece appeared to be the...
Yes, well, I will pass over that, and I can now give you the final scores, which are... Alan and Michael, a fine 14, but Richard and Ian this week, a glorious 15, and our week's widow. To end with, here's a revealing item found in the Times City Diary and sent to us by Mr. J. Lane of Hitchin.
One shareholder at the Sears annual meeting at London's Marriott Hotel yesterday wanted to know why none of the resolutions put to the meeting had been seconded. Sears chairman Geoffrey Maitland-Smith replied that they stopped seconding resolutions 3 years ago. The reason he gave was that when in the past they had held annual meetings at the Suffrage Hotel, the platform on which the directors sat was so narrow that if two of them stood up at once, it would tip up and they would all fall backwards.
Well, on that silly note, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingram, Ian Hislop, Michael White and Alan Parham. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by John Langdon and the producer, Amanda Unici.